All right, so Boker Tov to all. I'm very excited about this shiur today and at all the journey that we're going to be going through with Abarbanel, because I think we're getting the essence of who he was as a human being and as a person, and the extent of how his parshanut works, because he himself is so excited about this opportunity that he has to discuss the Tchiyat HaMetim, resurrection of the dead. He himself goes on a limb and goes on his own journey in a way that I think is extremely indicative of his method and of his broad shoulders, I would say, and the depth of his understanding philosophically, scientifically, and everything else. Just what we should dive in a easier, like landing in an easier way. I'll just remind us that we're talking about a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, so anybody who has Pirkei Avot next to him, it might be good to just bring it out. We're in Perek Revi'i, and I know because of different versions, you might find it difficult to find. It's Perek Revi'i, Mishnah Kafchet 28 by me. It might be different by you, Bruce, right? I remember last time we spoke. We're talking about the Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, very interesting. Not a person we know too much about, and not a person who is quoted too often. But it's interesting that Dafka him, out of everyone, is the one who brings this unbelievable foundation that we find as a foundation. The Rambam himself finds one of the foundations of the Ikarim, of things we need to ought to believe in, have to believe in, and those who don't believe in it, ad kedei kach, to that extent, have no chelek la'olam haba. So that's very interesting. Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, we don't know too much about him. We just, HaKapar, I'm just reminding you, we said it could be a place that he lived in, Makfar Kapira. It could be a way of making a person who makes wine out of a plant that we know today as a tzalaf.
I think in Katsrin, there's a reconstructed little village there of ancient Katsrin, and there's a plaque. Oh, it's a kapar. It's not the real stone, real stone maybe somewhere, but indicating
Interesting.
that's where he lived.
Interesting. It more interesting is to note the elephant in the room, right? And everyone discusses this, that Tanaim had a day job. They worked. They had a melacha. They did something with their 6 days of work, and they combined that with tremendous learning in Torah and gadlut in Torah, which is very beautiful. And the Mishnah could have all just said Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, Rabbi Elazar Omer, but they say Rabbi Elazar HaKapar. And there's a point to that, and there's virtue to that, and there's value to that. So it's important for us to remember that the Mishnah itself described these people according to their profession. They didn't see that as something that belittles them in any way. On the contrary, so Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, we don't know too much, but despite the fact that he's not quoted too often, we know from all kinds of, external literature, he did not like monks, itnazrut. He obviously, like a lot of Tanaim of Pirkei Avot, is completely opposed to anybody's too proud of himself in any way. He loved Eretz Yisrael extremely. He loved living in it. He saw peace as a virtue that a person has to really chase after and make it part of his life. What else can I say? Different things. I mean, we can go deeper into who he was, but I would like to dive into the issue of Tchiyat HaMetim. So the first part of this Mishnah talks about those three midot, three things that make a person, I would say, not part of this world. And not part of this world means it takes you out, either in the fact that you won't find ever peace, ever, you won't find any equilibrium, right? If you chase after kin'ah, tavan, kavod, jealousy, lust, and honor, you will be very quickly out of this life, out of the cycle of life, out of the cycle of communities and people, etc. And from that, he dives, Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, into the famous Mishnah. I'll just repeat it again. The first part, Hu haya omer, hayiludim lamut, hametim vehametim lehachayot, veachaim lidon, lida, veleodia, velehivada, shehu el, hu hayotzer, hu habore, hu hamevin, hu haed, hu hadayan, hu baal hadin, hu atid, Ladun. We'll stop here. Bruce, do you have the Pirkei Avot next to you? You probably don't, right? In English. Can't hear you.
No, I don't have one with me.
Okay. Those who are born are eventually will die. Those who are dead will eventually live. People, those who are alive will be judged. V'chaim lidon, lida, to know and to be known and to have known that God is the creator, the master of the universe, who he's the only one who understands. He's the Ed, he's the Dayan, he's Baladin, etc. Okay. So we'll start with Abarbanel. Buckle up, because this is where he really flexes everything he has. Ledati. He says, I believe, says Abarbanel, that this Mishnah is tremendously valuable, tremendously deep and profound. And this Shalem, he called the Tanaim Shlemim, wanted to give us the belief, the faith, to expand on the faith of Tchiyat HaMitim by its foundations. And all the insinuations and all the drushim, the drash, that are included and then a part of this pina hazot. He calls it pina, which is basically another foundation or another element in Judaism. He says, Abarbanel says, I believe he covered all the bases when it comes to this element, to this idea, to this concept. Ve'ein safek shayu dvarim ele, and I have no doubt, he says, that the Tanaim knew these foundations directly from the prophets themselves, that they had Ruach Hashem in them, and Ruach Hashem came out of them, and they completely stood and knew and understood the profound secrets of the divine in this world on earth. But because we're talking about things, and we're going back to what we discussed several weeks ago, Mount, because these things are mysterious, because these things are the hidden parts of the Torah, and you can ask why. Well, maybe we'll get to that. We'll have a discussion on that in a minute. Because these things are meant to be mysterious, are meant to be secret, are meant to be a little bit hidden. Hayu medabrim bahem achachamim birashei dvarim. Because they're so deep and profound, you couldn't just talk about them as if it's a normal, regular thing, like you would really understand. Because it's so profound, you have to discuss these things in insinuations, in riddles. You can't say these things bluntly up front. And this maybe answers some of the questions that you or I would have about why doesn't the Torah actually explicitly say that there's Olam Haba or Tchiyat HaMitim or any other main foundations that we find, to be not discussed in the Chumash or in the Torah, but are discussed by Chazal. These are meant to stay hidden, insinuated, and you have to understand the things on your own. V'yoter amok mizeh, says even deeper than that, shayu omrim gzera achat, when they used to give you a gzera, a commandment, v'yu mechavnim ba'shtayim ha'shalosh emunot amitiyot, and behind whatever gzera it is that Chazal used to give us, behind that, you have to understand there might even be two or three different beliefs and faiths and understandings of the spiritual elements of life. So Abarbanel says, I see this as a very, very deep mi yimtza'enu. He says, who can really understand the depth of what this means of Tchiyat HaMitim? What we really have left is from the asmachta'ot, or from the discussions that the prophets bring us, and whatever the Chachamim said, a little bit here and a little bit there, scattered across the Torah Shebe'al Peh. Mibli shenimtza bo drush shalem b'shorashav. It's a little bit, it says a bits and pieces of crumbs of this huge puzzle, and you will never find in one place the entire concept and the entire appreciation of this element and this belief and this faith. And he says that is intentional. Kehina Rav HaGadol, even the Rambam, he says, when he brings the different Ikarim, he brings all of them and discusses them, kol echad mehem, but besides the Tchiyat HaMitim. And he writes like this in the 13th Ikar, right? The Rambam has 13 Ikarim that a Jew needs and has to believe in. And the 13th one is Tchiyat HaMitim. V'kvar biyarnu inyano v'sodotav, says the Rambam, and I already discussed what it means and its secrets. And that's all the Rambam says. And the Abarbanel asks, wait a second, why do you say that, Rambam? We don't know anywhere else that you expand on this notion that there's Tchiyat HaMitim. I don't know, what other book did you discuss it in? And then Abarbanel goes to the different books of the Rambam. He says, I haven't seen in one place that he discusses or expands on this Ikar called Tchiyat HaMitim.
Most
Even
welcome.
if it's such an important Ikaron in Yahadut, why don't they expand on it? That's what I understand.
So again, my answer is, to the best of my understanding, to what the Abarbanel is saying. He says it's intentional. Some concepts in Judaism are so profound, so deep, are so difficult for the human brain to fathom. It would be a mistake, and it wouldn't lead anywhere if the Torah would actually say it up front, so you wouldn't really understand it. It has to be said in insinuations. I'll give you an example. The actual creation of the world is discussed in, if what I remember correctly, 30 something psukim. 30 psukim, 36, 35, I don't remember exactly the number. Somebody's mic is on in the car. So the actual creation of the world is discussed in three in 30 something psukim. Why, you would ask, right? And then you have the Mishkan that's discussed, right, across like 500 psukim. God
Well, you could
isn't,
say the same thing, that the creation of the world is not an important part of Yahdut.
of
It could
course
be
it is,
briefly
of course it is.
because in other words, it doesn't go into great detail because it's not something that we carry with us in our daily lives like the Mishkan. But as it
So
relates to
I beg to differ. I think the creation of the world is tremendously fundamental to our faith as Jews.
No, but we don't need to know the details, and that's why I didn't give details. The details aren't important.
One of the reasons were because that God is not here to reveal the way he created the world. He just passes on this, the notion. You have to understand the world is not, it's not a natural cause of the universe. There was a time in history, a time and point in history where the world was actually created by the divine. And at that point,
Yeah, but more than that, we just don't know the details. I would say regarding the afterlife question, you were muted, by the way. There was different factions of Judaism around the Second Temple period. A very large faction did not believe in an afterlife, and so you have
a lot of things.
within Judaism on that question. The Rambam is pointing out that he's on the team that comes from that group that believe there is an afterlife, but
So
as I
the Abarbanel says two things. First of all, he says there is an afterlife, there is the resurrection of the dead, and the Abarbanel completely agrees, and he'll I don't know if to say the word prove, but he will go on the journey with you hand by hand and show you why this is so fundamental, why this is so true. Also, I would say, you're saying that the creation of the world is not important, or it's not a
No,
fundamental belief.
the details
The
about his
details are
death.
not important. So the
Like
Tehillat HaMitim,
how
also,
many
there's no
millions of
way.
years it took, or what the elements were involved, or meaning the way a physicist might study it, those details aren't necessarily, obviously, that's why it's not mentioned. It's not mentioned black and white, just to know
It's
the
not
process.
mentioned. It's not mentioned black and white, according to the Abarbanel, because there is no way that your human mind can fathom what that actually means. He says
Well, we have
it would be a
physicists that
mistake.
way
You'd be. By the
before.
way, I want to another thing. The actual discussion, and this is I'm saying very carefully, the actual discussion of the creation of the world through the Garden of Eden and through the trees and the fruits and the rivers and all those are tremendous deep metaphors to something tremendously deeper than that, right? So we can't even understand the creation of the world, the appearance of the human being, the Homo sapien, everything else about that. Science tries to fill in the gaps and the missing links and everything else. The Torah brings you an insinuation how that would come about and to try and understand the deep concepts behind it. I would imagine that the reason why Tchiyat HaMitim isn't mentioned explicitly is because it would be impossible, even by insinuation, to bring that about in a way that would make any type of sense to you, to the human beings who lived through in the primitive worlds as well, to understand that that's a possibility, to understand how that would happen. Maybe today, with genetic engineering and all kinds of other, advanced scientific places that we've reached, we can maybe try and understand a little bit more what that would look like or how that looks. But I find that to be, look, I'm also very critical about, things like this to a point. But when I know that the Abarbanel is tremendously pragmatic and a big rationalist, and yet he accepts this and discusses it in length, let's give him the opportunity to try and take us through that journey. Vegam Besefer Hamore, if there's any other question, I mean, feel free. I agree with you, it's still a puzzle. Why wouldn't that even be said in insinuation? Ani, you have that in Hazinu, for instance. Ani machatzti v'ani arape, ani mechaye u'memit. You have certain words where God, where it's insinuated something along those lines, right? But let's continue with the Abarbanel. If you have more questions, happy to discuss. Even in the Moreh Nevuchim, where the Rambam discusses the spiritual beliefs and the understanding and the philosophies, he doesn't go into the Katamitim. And the only place that he does, says the Abarbanel, is in Samigeret that he did about it. V'sham kiyem v'chzik bapina azoti. Even in that letter where the Rambam discusses the Tchiyat HaMitim in depth, at the edge of the roots, the foundations of his understanding and appreciation, other Chachamim did not agree with the Rambam about that. And after him, 200 years after him, comes the Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman. And the Abarbanel likes the Ramban. That's a beautiful. He says the Ramban went even deeper and higher to levels, right? Harav HaKadosh, he calls him Abarbanel. You should respect, you should understand, appreciate what he's saying. He doesn't say that about everybody. So he calls the Ramban Harav HaKadosh in a place which is called Shaar HaGmul, where Ramban talks very much in depth about the foundations of Tchiyat HaMitim. Imiyot ofen chakirato bilti mesuder. It says that the Abarbanel, the way the Ramban discusses Tchiyat HaMitim, is not organized. It's not, there's no method behind it. Vegam biktzat shorshav reiti. And even I respect the Ramban very much, I have many doubts about the way he understands the foundations of Tchiyat HaMitim. And greater than the Ramban, and greater than the Rambam, says the Abarbanel, is Rabbi Saadia Gaon, who lived before both of them. Bashar Hashvi Misefer Emunot, that brought many, many ta'anot, arguments, and questions and answers about Tchiyat HaMitim. Libo Shalem Im Hashem Belo Safek V'Dvarav L'Shem. I know that the Rasag, and Rasag was a tremendous Tamid Gaon, a huge, huge Tamid Chacham, and a very spiritual human being, and definitely Shem Shalayim, Yeshalem Hashem Paolo, may God reward Rabbi Saadia Gaon for the works that he's done for us. V'lefi gam bo, and even with all the compliments, notice what Abarbanel does. This is very classic and typical. V'lefi bo mevucha rabba. It's mevucha, how would I say mevucha? It's sfekot. I see many doubts. Even in the Rasag's words, sfekot atzumot, huge doubts in what the Rabbi Saadia Gaon does. And not only that, I find contradictions in what he's saying. Huge contradictions and doubts of what the Rasag is saying. V'achareihem b'fiyem yirtzu sela. And then he's, okay, brings Rabbi Chasdai, okay, he means about the Rabbi Chasdai Kreskas, who also an unbelievable Jewish Tamid Chacham, a philosopher. He's got a very interesting understanding and appreciation of freedom of will, which is a little bit, I would say, even maybe the Spinoza himself maybe was inspired by Rabbi Chesdai Kraskas's understanding of the freedom of will. So therefore, because I've so many doubts, says the Abarbanel, with all these Gdolim who came before me, I've risen up, I'm getting up, led Dodi to my loved one, V'chibarti oto ma'amar tzedek olamim asher zacharti. I wrote a book called Tzedek Olamim, and there I went very deep into the Tchiyat HaMitim, into its reasonings, into its objectives, into the beginnings, and I basically solved all the doubts that I just discussed. Vibirati had tzodek mi bilti tzodek, and I filtered and screened between what's true and false, and the opinions that I believe to be wrong. Vaya be'enai uve'enei kol bal kanaf ha'ma'amar ahu, anyone who saw it, anyone serious who looked at the book, melacha rabba, respected it. Ha'omnam yatsa mi'iti v'omar achtarof toraf mipnei goim mipnei listim ve'lo reiti v'adhena. I put tremendous amount of work into this piece of literature, into this book about Tchiyat Hamitim, and unfortunately, this book got lost. This book is never found because I had to run away from place to place. I don't know where that book is, and I have never found him. Tarof Toraf, we know where he takes that from, and I don't have any remnants of that book that I worked very hard to create. Come with me now to this big deep Mishnah. And now basically what the Abarbanel is going to try to do, he's going to try to write over again and try to trace all those thoughts and all that inspiration that he had when he wrote the book, Tzedek Olamim, that was about Tchiyat Hamitim that he eventually lost. So he says like this. He says, the Rambam, he says, understood and commentated about this whole kula al din olam haneshamot v'gmulo shama. He says the whole concept that the Rambam brings about Tchiyat Hamitim has to do about the judgment day of the soul and the reward that you're going to get in the afterlife, but not about the actual resurrection. V'ein ken dati, I don't agree with the Rambam about this. Ki hi tevaer inyan ha-tchiya be'emet, because I believe Tchiyat Hamitim is not a figurative metaphor about your soul living in the world of the souls. I don't think that that's the only concept that's behind the words Tchiyat Hamitim. I really believe, says the Abarbanel, that there's something called the resurrection of the dead, that the dead will rise and live again on this planet, on earth. V'ra'iti ba mitzuyarot pituchei chotam. Okay, v'fikir ra'iti le'arech aleim k'derech ha'shorshim. V'lo תקווה ולא תוכיל ממני שבכל גרוש מהם. I'm just going to skip you a little bit. I'm not going to go into every single opinion that's out there about Olam Haba and Tchiyat Hamitim, because that's a lot of melacha, that's a lot, that's a big job, that's a big undertake. ואולי יעלה פירוש המשנה הזאת לבדה יותר מפירוש המסכת כולה. He says, and maybe the value you're going to get from understanding this Mishnah is greater, listen carefully, than the entire Masechet of Avot. If you understand this Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, some people say Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, you will get much deeper and much greater value than you would get from the entire Pirkei Avot. That's saying a lot. That's really saying a lot. Lachen amarti, Shmali, listen to me, and I'll teach you the roots, the foundations of this value, of this concept. Things that are completely loyal to the understanding of what Rabbi Eliezer HaKapar wanted to say. Im timtza chen b'nei Hashem v'ashiveni el chaburi v'areini ota v'etnaveo. Maybe if one of you find this piece of paper that I'm writing now, maybe you might find my actual book and bring it back to me. Okay. V'inyan ha-ma'amar hazeh. And now he's going to start the journey with Rabbi Eliezer HaKapar. After Rabbi Eliezer HaKapar spoke about the three explosive things that prevent a person from growing in this world and living a good, healthy life. We said kinata vakavod, the things that make you maybe die spiritually or physically. Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, very naturally, the evolution of the next thing that he should say, let's talk about what happens in the world to come. And what are the foundations of these concepts that come from the actual value, the actual virtue, or the actual ma'ala idea, and the fact that there will be the resurrection of the dead. Okay, the first foundation is that when a person dies a physical death, because that's the only thing that dies, the soul never dies, the soul is eternal, and the body decomposes, the soul, the mind, the consciousness stays eternal, because it doesn't, it's not, it was always existent and it will always live. Even though we believe that now the soul is here on earth, We don't have to also believe or think that there's necessarily also a death or an end. The fact that we know that the neshama is right here in the body at this given time, at present, on planet Earth, and now I'm talking to you and you're listening to what I'm saying and reading, doesn't mean that there'll be an evolution where, just like the body disappears and disintegrates and decomposes, that the neshama also does. Because the neshama has nothing to decompose. There's nothing about the neshama that will disappear or will disintegrate. Because the only thing that disintegrates are things that are made from anything material, anything materialistic. The fact that you can learn and expand and perfect your consciousness and have an identity and do and act and have a drive and everything else, it doesn't mean that there's a certain element there of matter. Even though there are elements there of matter, but the actual essence of the neshama is not materialistic. Therefore, you don't have to find the concept of it living forever and eternal, even though it's a tough concept to appreciate. You don't have to also think that everything's the same. If there's a body that decomposes, therefore the neshama also decomposes. And in complete contrary to the concept, to the beliefs of maybe the atheists or the materialistic views that say that the neshama is just the brain is chemistry and chemistry electricity, and that's all it is, and there's nothing else to it. He says that is not complete. We believe the polar opposite of that. We believe in there's nothing about the neshama that needs to die or can die. וכבר אימת השורש הזה, even Shlomo HaMelech עליו השלום, in Kohelet, proves this fundamental understanding. He writes in Kohelet י' ב' ו', וישוב האפר אל הארץ כשהיה, והרוח תשוב אל האלוהים אשר נתנה. Kohelet himself, Shlomo HaMelech, writes that the soul will return to God, even though the body itself will decompose in the soil, in the ground that it came from. והסתכל שבאפר אמר כשהיה, interesting. Abarbanel goes deep now into the understanding of the words themselves of what Shlomo HaMelech says. It's, what does it say again? Let's read this carefully. Ve'yeshuv ha'afar el ha'aretz k'shehaya, meaning the matter, the body, the flesh, will return to what it was. But he didn't say that the ruach will go k'shehaya. Lefi she'aruach yishtalem b'torah v'mitzvot yikabel av scharo acharei ha'mavet. O yanesh al itatzluto v'adromem. Very interesting. We understand that very simply, very, you know, it's very simple to understand because that we know that the flesh, the body, everything, you know, it's materialistic and it's made out of matter. But the soul will return to God, asher netana, because when you come down to earth, your consciousness, your soul, your identity grows. If you choose to overcome, we spoke this a lot, even those three things that we spoke about before, jealousy, lust, and honor, you manage to overcome even those basic drives in life, there's something that grows in the neshama itself. That's why it doesn't return to the way it was. It returns to the God that brought it to this world. And it's a very, very interesting, I find, a very nice way of understanding this pasuk of Shlomo HaMelech. Ve'en ken haguf, ki hu lo ishtalem klal. Body, the body stays more or less, obviously it grows and it goes through an evolution, but it doesn't change more than that. In the same way, the same level in which it came to this world, that's the way it leaves. It grew physically, but nothing really changed fundamentally about the body itself. Because lo nishlam od, nothing became more sophisticated in the human body. Ve'en ken baruach, in the spirit, and Abarbanel does this sometimes. He'll go again into the concept, and Maharal also does this a lot. Because he finds this to be so important, we have to understand it. The ruach, the spirit, returns to God, asher netana, aval lo k'shehaya. We all hope, and we all pray, that we live such a meaningful and purposeful life that we return our souls to the divine, to God, not the way it was, but in a more perfected way, in a more profound, deeper, higher level, more ready to accept whatever it did or didn't do in this world, whatever level you got to in this world, you managed to bring your soul to by the many, many thousands and thousands of junctions in which we made choices in. And every choice we made, we grew from. And everything we've done, we hopefully, you know, excelled and learned. So that level of consciousness and understanding and spiritual level, that's why Shlomo HaMelech says that in the way he does.
Yeah, but the soul, also, there's no man who hasn't done an Avera. Therefore, the soul has something that has to be purged from it.
True, true. And I'm sure, a very, very good point. And I'm sure the Abarbanel will discuss that as well. But don't forget that a person, this is what's so beautiful about the Jewish concept of tshuva and tshuva shlema, me'ava, right? When you do real tshuva, pure tshuva, from love, not from fear, there's something about that that completely transforms your identity and everything, even averot that you've done, even the chataim, the things that you've done that where you've missed opportunities to do good or where you actually did bad or you did averot, those themselves even turn into mitzvot.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. However, what actually is happening is, for example, when the guf gets sick, when your body gets sick, and your body fights off a disease, it creates a marker in your body forever. It's in your DNA. We thought it was junk DNA, and but that isn't junk DNA. Those are markers of things that your body has fought off and can then rely on again. It's a marker.
Right.
The soul,
very beautiful.
The soul gets a permanent mark when it comes down to this world.
Very nice. Very, very nice. I like that. I like that a lot. True. Very, very true. I'm sure Barbanel would agree with you as well. Velashoresh hazeh kiven atana beomro hayiludim lamut. And that's why Rabbi Elazar HaKapar said, those who are born will die. Salomar, mashu nolad, anything that's born, listen to the depths of what he goes into. And today, you know, many philosophers and theologians and others discuss this, and it's very interesting because this is right here in front of us. Anything that's born will die. Anything that comes to, right? Anything that comes to pass, anything that appears in this world materialistically, like the birth of our body, will die. It's already ready to die. From the second you're born, the countdown begins. And it starts, right? People say, right, in the age of 20, what is it, 27, things you start to... Your brain, your body, everything else, you know, in terms of the weakness and everything.
This
today,
is where
obviously,
Matrix
you could,
gets it from.
What? Obviously,
this
we
is
could
where the
maintain.
Matrix gets it from.
Excuse me?
The Matrix, a famous song, anything that has a creation has an end.
Right. But the soul is different. Lo ha-nefesh ha-sichlit, she'ina michlal noladim bebeten ha-mela. That's not born in the mother's womb. That's not born through the seed of the father. That's not part of the כי קודם לכן הייתה נבראת, והשפיע השם שמה, ולכן אינה למות. Because the soul was created before the world, before planets, or maybe before the earth. The souls existed and were brought to this world, to this planet, to these bodies, to where you are, to what you see now, in order to excel, to grow, to uplift, and all those things that we discussed many, many times. So that's the first, anything that's born will die. The second fundamental belief that you have to understand in this is when will be the actual resurrection? Haim tieh, this is very important, listen carefully. Haim tieh acharei sheyamutu anashim kulam, v'adama tesha'esh mama, v'az yichomitim. Is it going to be only after the entire world is, I don't know, maybe destroyed, all humans will die, and then there will come another existence, another element, another realm that we don't understand, as some of the Kadmonim, some of the ancient wise men thought? Or maybe it'll just be, we'll live, you, your grandchildren, us, whoever, will live in the world and life, and then suddenly there'll also be resurrection of the dead. And will they also have to die to resurrect in that period of time, and it's going to be like simultaneously. It's a very complicated thought to try and figure out, you know, to crack this puzzle, understand really what it really means, how and when exactly it's going to happen. There are many opinions that even Rabbi Saadia Gaon brings. Rabbi Elazar Kapar says, "Hayiludim lamut," meaning, what does that mean? Shebadorahu, at that generation, from the last ones that are going to be born, maybe we'll understand in a minute what that means. Biyot atidim lamut keshar anashim, hine bechayehem yavor ametim lachayot. For some reason, there will be a generation where they will not be able to reproduce. That's what I understand from what Abarbanel is saying here. The last ones that are going to be born and capable to bring life, that generation won't be able to bring more life, and that will be the generation where there will be the resurrection of the dead. It won't. The tchia won't happen after everybody dies. The world will be the same. They'll live longer lives, but that what it means, Iludim lamut. In that generation, where that generation will not be able to reproduce, there's going to be resurrection. That's what I understand. If you understand it differently, you're welcome to add. V'omnam, lama yeh chilufa ze ben bnei adam, shemhem yamutu veyakumu b'mishpat, umhem lo yikarem, ken? How can it be that some people will be zoche, let's say, to resurrect from the dead, and there'll be some that are just going to be born and live together with these beings of humans that were resurrected? Hidbe'er sibato b'mekomo ra'ui, v'ani ya'ir alav acharei ze. I will answer that question, but I'm not going to answer it now. That's a very big tease Barbanel is doing to us. And in this fundamental concept, from the time, from the period, from the actual point in history where this is going to happen, where God, the divine in its almighty wisdom and infinite wisdom, created in the beginning of the creation all the souls that God intended to come within the flesh and bodies of this world and the planet, interesting. After all the neshamot that God created before the world, that He intended for them to go through bodies so that they can grow, so that they can uplift themselves, so they can go through this trial of this world. After that is finished, after that point in time, we don't know exactly when that's going to be, but after all the neshamot were brought through bodies, that's exactly the point where there's going to be resurrection of the dead. The Mekubalim, the people from Kabbalah, from the hidden Torah, Torah Ta'ester, Ad she'ikalu, they write in Yevamot, Ad she'ikalu kol neshamot shebaguf, ki amru guf al makom madrigat kvutzam b'marom. I'm just reading the commentary down here. Okay, he says this is a very deep concept. He's not going to go deep into that. What exactly means the groups of the souls that God intended to come into bodies in this planet? Again, certain things, even Abarbanel himself, who's trying to reveal everything that he knows or understands in this, he says this is something I don't want to go into too deeply. V'chein amu b'masechet chagiga, שמכלל הדברים שיש בערבות, הם נשמתן של צדיקים, נשמות ורוחות שעתידין להיברות. אוקיי. וכבר נמצא הדעת הזה, גם כן מקדמונים מחכמי התכונה. Right? Some of the wise who were philosophers, or, you know, I would call, I mean, maybe the first psychologists of the world, שהאמינו חידוש העולם, believed that the world was created. Those from the Goyim who believe that the world was created at a certain point in history and it wasn't always existed, and it's just not, you know, random fluke of the way the universe acts. Ve'eminu im ze sofo ve'kaluto lezman yadua, and believe that the world will end at some given point. Acharei she'ikalu advarim v'yitzorei ha'olam she'ayu bekoach letzet la'pol b'chol yimei ha'olam b'zeh ha'tzofo. Those who believe this also believe that after all, almost like when the world was, after the Big Bang, there was a certain amount of energy, a certain amount of potential that was brought so that it could translate into and manifest itself through this world. But there's a limit to that energy and to that potential. And with that energy and potential, this blueprint that was created in the Big Bang, that God brought to this world, to the universe, to the cosmos, after that is fully burnt out, so to speak, That's the time when the world will come to an end. Kmo shebir haChacham Rabbi Avraham ben Rabbi Chiya Sefer Megillat HaMegillah. והרמב"ן, רבי משה בן נחמני, גם כן על השורש הזה בשער הגמול, ואליו כיוון גם כן השלם הזה באומר. This is what רבי אלעזר הכפר is insinuating, הילודים למות והמתים לאחיות. What does it mean? When יתאמו להיוולד הילודים העתידים למות, when all those who were supposed to be born were born, and were already dead, ושכבר קלו כל הנשמות לחול בגופות, and all the souls were already brought down to this world to live in bodies, that's the point in history when there's going to be Tchiyat HaMetim. So we discussed the point in history of when it's going to be, and we discussed the fact that it's actually going to happen in this world on the planet Earth and not on some sort of a metaphor, meaning some sort of a world of spirits. And now he's going to go into the... Oh, we're finished. Now, okay, perfect point to stop. Now he's going to start going into what exactly that looks like. What does Tchiyat HaMetim mean? How does the body come out of a grave? All that stuff that obviously we all are puzzled about, he's going to go into. So, Bezalat Hashem next week.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Benny. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You'll be back home next week?
What's that?
You'll be back home next week?
I hope. Yeah.